Hello, America, how are you? Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to 2010! Yes, my name is Jeff Heatherly, and you're listening to the first edition of the original, unoriginal podcast of the year 2010. Barring the whether or not we've been destroyed by some sort of crazy apocalypse at this point, we can't be certain. I won't tell you how early we're recording this, but we are recording this early. We'd have to. There's a reason for this, and we'll get to that in a moment, but first let me introduce my guests, plural. How's that a thing? First, I'll introduce a fellow that's been around a lot longer than pretty much anyone who's ever been on this show. My longest-running guest and the host of the wonderful podcast, Cinemantics, Mr. Nick Melton.
Hi, everybody.
Yes, yes. And making his return to the fold after many months.
Yay!
It's been since, I want to say episode 7 was our episode about Mighty Morphin Power Rangers the movie. Indeed. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. My roommate and close friend, Worth Beasley.
Hello, everyone. It's been a while.
It has been a while.
At least 11 episodes.
Yes. today I come to you with something that I've been looking forward to doing for a long time. What does that have to do with anything? anyway, we'll talk about that in a minute, I guess. I don't think we'll have a choice. I come to you today with another edition, a very, very special edition of the best movie of all time subseries of the OUP. It's the first ever two-parter, hopefully. I'm going to go ahead and say that now. I don't want any technical difficulties to screw me out of another two-parter. That happened to me once. An episode with the good old Syfe brothers.
Way back when.
But I think this time it'll work. It's a two-parter with four best movies of all time. Yes, four. Two per episode. You can't beat it. This is something I've wanted to do for all of the year of 2009, and unfortunately, as I mentioned in previous episodes, we got so backlogged with all those movie episodes that there was just no time to do this in the correct year. But January 1st is pretty damn close. So, with that being said, we are still celebrating the 25th anniversary of something, as we'll tell you with this film. So we'll just go ahead and start with the first film of this quadrilogy. From 1990, directed by Steve Barron, this is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Nothing? No reaction whatsoever?
We were just watching your face.
There was a long pause that probably won't make it to the final cut of this episode, but let me tell you.
Just be like, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, I can't believe you didn't say anything!
but yes, we are celebrating the 25th anniversary of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles franchise. I've been wanting to do this all year. We are recording this in 2009. 25th anniversary. The comic book started in 1984.
Oh, okay. I thought you meant the movie. And the movie has not been out for
20
years.
It's only been out for 19. Or 20. As
20
of
when
this.
You're hearing it.
Actually, you know what? Maybe that works. It's the 20th anniversary of this movie. Okay, that works. That's good. We made that work. but anyway, this movie is wonderful, and I know a lot of my listeners, a lot of my good friends and acquaintances have run up on this film. It means a great deal to a lot of people. And it's just awesome. And to go ahead and tell you, to get you pumped for what you're about to experience, we will be watching and commenting on all four theatrically released Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movies. We've got this one, we'll be discussing this one, and then we'll take a short, brief pause with that wonderful Hold music of ours to discuss Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, The Secret of the Ooze. And then next week's episode, we'll be covering Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 3, and then the most recent edition, 2007's TMNT.
Now, on Wikipedia, they say that that's a sequel, but is it really a sequel or just sort of a reboot of the series?
It can be taken either way. It's kind of like Superman Returns. In that you can watch it and have it be a denial of the existence of 3 and in many ways 2, or you can watch it and have it be a continuation because there are references to both 2 and 3 in the movie.
Nice.
But you know what? We shouldn't be talking about the fourth one yet because it's time to talk about the
first.
I was
just asking.
No, it's a fine question. But also because our man Werthel's here has a social event he needs to attend.
Yes.
Coming up. So we've only got him for a brief time. We may actually have to continue without you at one point.
Which we'll deal with, I guess.
But while we have you here, I'm gonna break with protocol, break with the usual let's talk about cast, let's talk about plot thing. And go ahead and just say, Worth, do you have any immediate comments you'd like to make as you're probably going to be absent panelist?
Not any immediate comments that I can think of right off. I'm used to and I'm fine with like letting you all go first and then joining in after that.
All right. we're just glad you were able to join us for this film. I think that's the key thing here. And I mean, and that you're able to participate in this episode in some fashion.
Yeah, and I'll be looking forward to participating in the other three.
Yeah, he'll be back for two later in this episode. So talking about cast, this is a movie, well, first off, I mean, for those of you who don't know, and if you don't, how couldn't you? This movie is a film that employs the use of creature effects, like practical creature effects and puppetry from the Jim Henson Workshop, which is a wonderful thing.
They're always the best puppets
They really are. I mean, Stan Winston kind of gives them a run for their money from time to time, but
not really.
But now he's gone.
Yeah,
so
they're both gone now.
They're both gone.
I was going to say, well, so was Stan Winston.
But we're going to talk, I guess, about your cast here. And now it's kind of hard to really talk about the cast because we have dual casts, really. We have the cast of people who are in the turtle suits, and then we have the voices. Now, I can actually distinguish because these people up here, with the exception of, starting right there at Robbie Rist, who plays the voice of Michelangelo, all those were just the guys in the suits. I'll go ahead and mention them because they deserve some credit. Josh Pais was in the Raphael suit.
More importantly, man in cab.
Yes,
voice.
He was the guy who was in the cab that led to one of the best lines in the movie. You know, what was that? Looked like some big turtle.
In a trench coat. You're going to LaGuardia, right?
Awesome. We have Michelin Sisti
Pizza Man
as the pizza delivery man and Michelangelo.
Ah, come on, I couldn't find the place.
Yeah, we have Leif Tilden as Donatello and the foot messenger. You know, our master sends you a message. Slap.
Yes.
And then
Wonderful.
We have David Foreman as Leonardo and gang leader. I don't know which gang he leads, because it's certainly not the other gang leader who we'll be mentioning in a moment, because he's a very big star now. But let's talk about the voices. As I mentioned, Robbie Rist as Michelangelo. A lot of people love Michelangelo. He's the most whimsical of the turtles, to be certain. Robbie Rist, a lot of people will know as playing the role of Cousin Oliver on the Brady Bunch when he was a young man.
Wow. Bobby, you get back in the garage!
I did not know that.
Robbie Rist has actually had a pretty long career as a voice artist, and I believe he did the voice of...
he was on Chips!
He was on Chips.
And Knight Rider.
But I'm saying, I was going to tell you, he does the voice of Michelangelo in all three. Does he do it in the fourth? Just the first three films? I think he did some... Did he do the voice on the cartoon? He didn't. But clearly whoever they found to do the voice in the cartoon sounds exactly like Robbie Rist, so good for them. Who else we have? We'll go ahead and get straight to this. The voice of Donatello, the one and only Mr. Corey Feldman, who plays the role in this film, and I'll go ahead and tell you, he also reprises the role in the third. It's Corey Feldman, who's a presence in a lot of films that we have covered and will cover on both the OUP and on your show, Cinemantics, Nick. Such as Gremlins, which hit the airwaves, I would say, about a week before this, or roughly thereabouts.
Roughly thereabouts.
So that's exciting. We also have Brian Tochi as the voice of Leonardo. Now, the Leonardo voice is a voice that I've always contended, I think, sounds exactly like the same voice that he had in the cartoon, and we're going to check on that now. And I'm wrong. He does, once again, however, do the voice of all the characters of Leonardo in all three of the original three films.
In The Lion King.
His voice in The Lion King.
As Hyena, uncredited.
Oh.
Fighting Hyena.
Okay. I mean, we could go on for hours
and
about...
And Mulan 2, which is more important.
Yes,
he's in
an episode of Family Guy.
And Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
Yes, but I'm trying to cut away. I'm going to cut away from this because you're too interested. Because this is such an extensive cast... powerful movie, plus I'm really trying to get some worth comments in, but the point is, these people all have very extensive resumes, for voice acting mostly. But then we also have our human actors. We have Judith Hogue as April O'Neil. This is the only film of the quadrilogy in which she plays the part.
Film.
Yeah, well, I mean, for the record, she is the only one of the four, if you don't count the fact that the animated April O'Neil in TMNT is a redhead. But it's voiced by a blonde, Sarah Michelle Gellar. But in this, she's the only redhead to actually play April O'Neil. So she gets some credit for that. And she's not bad. She serves her purpose. She doesn't...
She had the yellow trench coat in the beginning.
Yes, she did, which was really awesome. And then her love interest, I guess you could say, and just the overall awesome guy that is Casey Jones, is played by wonderful character actor Elias Koteas. who has had a pretty extensive career on of his own right. I will look at some of his credits so I can give you a good picture of where he's gone.
I miss him.
I miss him very much as well. He does make an appearance in the third film as Casey Jones. He skips out for the second, as we'll mention when we discuss it. But he's been in a lot of movies since then. He's been in, let's see, Fallen with Denzel Washington and John Goodman.
Aft Pupil.
He was in Shooter with Mark Wahlberg.
He was in Shooter, yeah.
And I believe he is to be featured in the upcoming Martin Scorsese film, Shutter Island.
He is indeed, nice. as the character Andrew Leidis.
Wasn't he in, like, some Law & Order series or something?
He was in the pilot of the very, very short-lived Law & Order spinoff, Conviction.
Right, I told you about this.
I've never even heard of that.
I remember Trial by Jury, which only lasted, like, one season.
Conviction was the spinoff of Law & Order that was about young, up-and-coming lawyers, and it was more character-driven. Mm-hmm. And he played their original mentor, and then they killed him off in the first episode, and that was just like, well, they got rid of Casey Jones. Jeff, you don't need this show. And so I stopped
watching.
That's
why the show failed.
I honestly think America was offended that they would kill off Casey Jones in the first episode of their damn show. And rightfully so, America. Well done to have that show canceled. We also have, for continuing with our human characters, we also have Danny Pennington, played by Michael Turney, and his father, Charles Pennington, played by Jay Patterson, who he had a picture up on IMDb
before. He must be important.
he must be important or have had a more extensive career.
And he has.
He's had, you know, TV roles on things like NYPD Blue and LA Law and Murder, She Wrote. He was in City of Angels and Slums of Beverly Hills and A Civil Action. He's been in a couple films. He's not a bad guy.
And in My Sassy Girl.
I'm just going to leave it at that. should I even bother to look at the resume of Michael Turney, who played Danny?
He sounds familiar.
Actually, no, he's only been in three movies.
He's only been in one other thing after Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
He was the character of Dwayne in Cost of Living.
In 97, a good 12 years ago.
Wow. Indeed. We also have Kevin Clash, talking about voices. Kevin Clash, a lot of people know, he's the voice of Elmo and a number of the other Muppets.
Nice.
He's the voice of Splinter, their rat master. Everyone knows who Splinter
That's
is.
That's surprising.
We have James Saito as the Shredder, or his alter ego, Oroku Saki. He's the villain of our piece, of course. But not the voice. The voice is done by David McSharon. And of course, we also have Michael McConaughey. I'm going to assume, yes, the voice, indeed. Not McConaughey, McConaughey, but McConaughey.
How amazing that would be as if the voice, it were Michael McConaughey as
Tatsu.
Tatsu.
The voice of Tatsu. Tatsu.
He needs to do some steak commercials.
And we have the physical body of Tatsu, played by Toshiro Obata. And this is the Shredder's right-hand man.
He's credited in this film, though, as Toshishiro Obata.
Indeed. We also have playing the role, one of the few roles that is repeated between one and two, playing the role of Chief Stearns, we have Raymond Serra, who is just a hard-ass police chief in New York.
Now, Raymond Serra sounds familiar.
He does. He's been in a lot of things as well. He was on an episode of Who's the Boss.
And Matlock. And Murder, She Wrote.
Murder, She Wrote, Murphy Brown. He hasn't been in too many notable movies.
And Il Silenzio del Prosciutto.
He's been in a lot of Italian mafia films, which...
Have you seen him in any of the films you watched?
Yeah, I was about to say, I'm taking a mafia film class, and I'm sad I haven't seen him in any of those films.
He's in Mail Order Bride as robber.
Oh, but we're going to stop with that right now, because we have one more name to mention. And that is, of course, playing Head Thug, who is basically the head of we'll get to the plot in a moment, but there's one gang, there's a gang of ninjas, and there's a gang of just, you know, street
delinquents.
Delinquents and street toughs. And their head thug, who is not given a name, but is given a hefty number of lines, is played by a beloved nowadays actor, Sam Rockwell. which is pretty awesome, because, I mean, I've seen this movie so many times since I was a kid, but, like, it was only when myself and my good friend Worth Beasley here went to one of those mixtape film series screenings we mentioned on the show a couple times, that we noticed it was him.
Yeah, I never knew that beforehand.
Yeah, and it was very interesting. There are some other cameos, apparently, that they note here, but Skeet Ulrich is a thug in this movie, apparently. Also, Rick Gomez, who a lot of people might know as being playing the character of Endless Mike Hellstrom on The Adventures
and
of Pete.
And Alex Muggleston, who I don't know who that is, but I like his name.
I like his name, but I was also going to mention Kevin Eastman, one of the creators of the original comic book series, making an appearance as a New York City citizen.
Nice.
That could be anyone out of several hundred thousand people.
It truly could. but we've talked about the plot here. We talked about...
We didn't talk about the cast.
One thing I want to mention in terms of credits is that, Nick, you noticed someone in the full casting crew. I'll go down to the editor. Who was our editor here?
There are actually three editors, but...
Sally Menke
does the editing for all of Quentin Tarantino's movies.
Nice.
So it was cool to see her on there. And John Dupre, the guy who wrote the music for the Spamalot musical, and basically all the other Monty Python movies.
That's awesome.
That is interesting.
There's some interesting credit people in this movie.
That's really cool. But in terms of plots, I mean, it's a Ninja Turtles movie, so the plot is fairly simple. but we have four turtles, as I mentioned: Leonardo, Donatello, Michelangelo, and Raphael. They were the story behind the turtles, even though you should, I mean, do you care, listeners, or do you not already know? Do I have to come to the thing and smack you? They were small turtles in a sewer in New York. They stepped through a puddle of radioactive ooze and grew to basically human size and grew an intellect and became teenagers who loved pizza and surf lingo.
Teenage Mutant Turtles.
Yes, Teenage Mutant Turtles.
Ninja Turtles.
Ninja Turtles.
Not until later.
Their master, Splinter, who is a man-sized rat, he grew up in Japan.
I have a question about Splinter.
Okay.
Okay.
Splinter.
He doesn't grow big until he gets into the toxic waste, but somehow he was still already, like, highly advanced and intelligent rat to learn martial arts.
Well, because
Japan.
He's an Asian rat.
Yeah.
Oh, that's it? He's Asian?
I don't mean to perpetrate a stereotype, but have you seen an Asian in math class?
Oh! Now, yes, I have.
Yeah. Do math! we're terrible people. I love Asians, by the way. They're wonderful people. But anyway, the point is, he's just an intelligent rat. Don't fuck with that.
I was just wondering how this rat earned the physical ability to learn ninjutsu without the effect of toxic.
He watched his master, Hamato Yoshi, perform the moves and just did it from his cage. You saw that montage.
I did see the montage.
It's like Trini learning martial arts from a praying mantis in Power Rangers.
Yes. I completely forgot about that. anyway, they live in a sewer in New York, you know, being ninjas and being turtles and living with a rat, watching TV and eating pizza. Good old times. And meanwhile, on the above ground, in the streets of the city, there is a rash of robberies and petty crimes going down. That reporter April O'Neil, played by Judith Hogue, is reporting on as the film opens, and we see a couple of examples of their petty thefts. They steal an elderly black lady's TV. They steal a whole truckload of like stereo goods out of a truck, like within 5 seconds of this dude going over to sign the little clipboard. It's
my theory is that there was only like one layer of them
right at the door,
so they could get all of them out of the truck and have an empty truck behind it.
Yeah, all these rash of thefts are going on, and it turns out all these thefts are being committed at the behest of Oroku Saki, the Shredder, and his clan of ninjas,
the Foot Clan,
which. Or The Foot, which, as April O'Neil remarked, sounds like a funky club for podiatrists, but is in fact not.
But it could be.
It could be.
Her sense of humor.
Yeah. But at the beginning of the film, we should discuss the end of the film because it really does set everything in motion, of course. April O'Neil does her report. She leaves the news station and is walking to her car when she notices that a group of street thugs, led by Sam Rockwell, are stealing monitors and cameras and things from a production truck. And they see that she's there, they try to attack her, the lights go out, and they end up, you know, bound in a corner, and she's laying there unharmed. But there is a Sai, the weapon, the Sai, S-A-I, laying on the ground, and we see the peering eyes of Raphael peering out from under a sewer lid. Oh, man. Damn!
You can tell that Raphael is the serious one because he curses.
Yes, he's the only one. Well, no.
He's also the only one with a New York accent.
Yes, and the only one who actually rocks the trench coat and hat ensemble in the entire movie.
True.
Which was a common thing in the cartoons.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, nice. They all wore them in the cartoons.
Nice. I didn't know that.
I remember those cartoons with fondness.
As do I.
I vaguely remember them.
But anyway,
I just keep interrupting you.
It's fine.
I like that even in the Wikipedia article, they mentioned 11th and Bleecker.
How can they not?
Also, they spelled Bleecker wrong.
It did.
Two E's and a C where they do E-A.
Wow.
A.
Indeed. But anyway, We're talking about the opening of the film, what sets this in motion. April O'Neil, she's rescued by Raphael without noticing it. Opening credits, the turtles eat some pizza, and then...
Or in the case of Splinter, it just gets splattered on the
It's really kind of gross. You know, I have a thing about cleanliness. But then Raphael just ain't having that. He don't take no mess. I keep using that phrase in every podcast we've done in the past 2 weeks. I don't know why. Raphael don't take no mess. And he heads out into the night one night because he's angry with his brother being wacky. And he goes to see a screening of Critters in the theater.
He doesn't seem too amused with that movie afterwards.
He should have gone to go see Gremlins.
Yeah. But no, he looks up and he's like, where did I come up with this? and he walks into the Central Park where he sees these two street hooligans who just stolen an old lady's purse and they're rattling through her things. He doesn't encounter them first. Who they encounter first is the one and only Casey Jones, once again played by Elias Koteas, who shows them what's what with his various sports-related weapons. Baseball bats, a cricket bat, hockey stick. He's got it all. I wanted to see him throw a shot put at someone at some point, you know? But
use hockey putts as projectiles.
Gosh, that'd be awesome. I think he did in cartoons, actually.
Nice.
And the comic book. But... yeah, so we have Raphael comes out of the forest he sort of views Casey Jones as much of an adversary as these two street toughs, and of course they get into fisticuffs, and Casey Jones sort of wins the day by dropping Raphael via cricket bat with the one flip swing head first into a trash can.
Why does it take him so long to get the trash can off his head?
I know, because he's got a shell, and maybe it was hooked on the shell.
Maybe.
That's a flimsy excuse.
Okay, well, anyway. At this point, Raphael goes home, and he's heading to the subway station. And at the same time, so is April O'Neil, where she is found by the foot ninjas, as we mentioned before, who bring her a message. Slap. Shut it! Shut her mouth! Stop talking about the Foot Clan on the TV station. She tries to fight them off, but they're ninjas. And
with one size.
And she has a purse.
She has a purse.
And one of Raphael's size.
One of Raphael's size, yeah, which they immediately knock away.
Well, yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Raphael, who's standing around a corner, grabs a side, kicks some ass, and carries April O'Neil to their lair, but not without being followed by one very crafty foot ninja who finds their lair, and that'll be useful later.
Who you would think got promoted.
But they and Splinter introduce themselves to April O'Neil. They introduce themselves and they become fast friends and allies. They go up to her apartment and have some pizza and do Sylvester Stallone and James Cagney impressions. and then they go home to find that Splinter has been abducted and their sewer home has been trashed by the Foot Clan.
Splinter.
What's wrong?
Splinter.
From here, they stay with April.
And they totally give her the puppy dog eyes.
They really do. They stay with April, and April, you know, she accommodates them. There's a couple of weird, like, comedies of errors with Charles Pennington coming to visit and almost catching them. And then there is... the Foot attacks them in their apartment, very, very painfully wounding Raphael. She, the Turtles, accompanied by Casey Jones, who joins the fight, head off to a farm in upstate New York to recuperate. And then from there they recuperate, they have a final battle with Shredder, Sam Rockwell says something funny, because Sam Rockwell, and there's drawing and insults and Corey Feldman, there's kissing, there's pork rinds, there's Trivial Pursuit, and then there's MC Hammer, and we should go ahead and say how they dispatch of the Shredder, because it will play heavily into Ninja Turtles 2. The Shredder is knocked off of a building at the end of a battle, land in the back of a garbage truck, and then allegedly crushed by the hydraulic pump of the garbage truck. Allegedly.
By Casey Jones.
We did just give away the ending, but it's basically a comic book movie. You knew it was going to have a happy ending.
And as it says, the film's core plot closely follows that of the first published Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles stories from issues 1, 10 through 11... Raphael number 1, as well as the Return to New York storyline, which is numbers 19 through 21.
Oh wow, indeed. I really wish I could get my hands on some of those old comics.
That would be cool
because they are. I've read some of them before, and they are really really great. So some things to note here is that it was the film received positive reviews, was the highest grossing independent film of all time when it was released.
That's right,
it
was an independent film.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Was a
and
huge,
part of it was filmed in Wilmington.
Well, yes, indeed, Wilmington, North Carolina. And was a huge hit at the box office, became the fifth highest grossing film worldwide of 1990, and remains the most successful TMNT film.
Nice. Not surprising. The first ones tend to do the best.
Indeed.
This is true. Unless you're the Star Wars franchise.
Indeed. It had a gross revenue of $201 million on a budget of almost $14
million.
Wow.
That's
impressive.
That's really impressive. That's the plot. That's the cast.
Legacy. They said something about Legacy down there.
Legacy following the huge success of Ninja Turtles.
Almost
the second one, the third, and then the fourth. So where do we go from here? We have worth for, I would say,
probably 5 minutes, a little bit less.
Okay, five minutes. We're going to let Worth go ahead and start with you. Worth, you have the floor. Favorite moments, favorite lines, whatever you want to say, go.
Not putting pressure on you or anything.
Yes.
Let's see. I'll probably start backwards. Because favorite moment, you can't beat the Turtle Power song at the end.
Yes, MC Hammer with Partners in Rhyme.
Wow.
With T-U-R-T-L-E power.
Wow. Pretty much almost any moment with Casey Jones is always favorite.
Yes, Casey Jones is a badass. There's no doubt about it.
I don't think you could have cast anybody else but Elias Cotillas.
It's true.
Either. Yeah. But yeah, just that's... And then the, I don't know, the insults going through the letters... Gack face,
camel brain,
hose brain, camel breath.
They're really
breath.
Clever.
Yeah.
They're quite clever there.
Although I feel sad that for some reason I remember that scene starting at G.
Right.
Like we'd skipped because if you really think about it, every profane word goes from A to F.
Right.
Not much after.
Right.
We'd just like to imagine all the terrible things they would have said. No, but we got to see it from basically the beginning of the string of insults.
Right.
But what else worth?
What else was a really good moment? Every moment. This is true.
This is a really great, this movie holds up so well.
Despite the bad 80s references.
Okay, sure. But what I'm going to say is that me and Worth, we went to see this at the Mixtape Film Series.
Mm-hmm.
About a week earlier, we had gone to see The Karate Kid.
Yeah.
And the thing is, on a comparative level, I mean, I know it was my first time ever seeing The Karate Kid at that
right.
time, but it's still, and even I think you commented that this movie actually seems to hold up better.
Mm. Oh, yeah, definitely.
There's something about this movie like that there isn't much in the way of, oh shit, this is early 90s or 80s, it makes me cringe. There's not really any of that in this movie.
The music does telegraph from the very beginning, though.
Yeah.
80s! A little bit.
I think what helps it hold up is that it was Jim Henson's puppets.
Yeah,
he's
involved. I think I'm not sure if he's as involved in the third, or if in fact he's even the puppeteer involved in the third.
If it is, they drastically changed the look.
They definitely did because they have more spots.
Yeah,
and they're a bit fatter.
Yeah, and they had beaks for mouths.
They eat pizza all the time.
But they also do like katas every day, so I'm sure
they cancel it out.
Yeah.
Oh boy. But yeah, like, probably the montage and then the campfire scene talking to Splinter. That's always a really good moment.
Yeah.
Very Star Wars-y.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is, kind of, isn't it?
I remember when we saw that in the theater with the Mixtape people, how, like, people were getting emotional.
I know, right?
And I remember talking to a good friend of mine, Kelly Morissette, or Kelly Moe, as I call her, as most people call her. But I remember she was like, oh my gosh, it was just, like, so emotional. And I was like, oh my gosh, yes. So emotional.
And it was really good, like... Not really like CGI or whatever, like really good effects with Michelangelo crying, like the little like wet.
You never want to see Michelangelo cry. He's everybody's favorite. I mean, I'm partial to Donatello.
I like Donatello because he wore the purple headband, and back when I was a kid, purple was my favorite color. And it was that simple.
Indeed. You know that the right wing would try to read something into that thing. You are a proud homosexual fellow, and apparently that's your color.
Man, well,
are you aware of that? That purple is allegedly the gay color.
I didn't know that.
You weren't. You really weren't.
Really?
No. Wow. Don't you remember the Tinky Winky?
Well, I remember that, but I just assumed that guy was crazy.
Well, that could be true too.
Yeah, I think it was more than true.
That's all that I really think of at the moment.
Okay. Well, that's huge.
This movie is sort of hard to pinpoint like one specific thing because it's just a big. Awesome mishmash.
It's big
awesome.
Epic.
Yeah.
Yes.
One thing I will say is that there's, like, the villain has no plans in the entire movie.
except to be made of sharp things.
That's his plan. No, they pickpocket things, and that's it.
Yeah, like...
He has no ultimate goal. He's just I'm content to just sit here.
Remember, he's trying to recreate that, like, sort of almost mafia-like crime wave that had happened years ago in Japan. It's about more of a tribute to the old ways than anything. Okay.
Yeah, because I had always wondered why in the world were they selling those TVs in the beginning.
That's why it's just because it's a recreation of the petty thefts in Japan.
Okay. I guess that's cool in a way that his plan isn't world domination. He just wants to, like...
Keep tradition.
You know, just keep going. You know, I'll sell these on the black market and keep rolling in the cash. You know, I don't need to have any grand ambition.
A little sorry for him.
I mean, you've got to imagine that eventually his plan is to, like, take over crime in New York and be, like, the new mafia boss in a fashion.
Right.
You know, like, I mean, that's the logical Batman way of thinking about it, you know.
But at the same time, it's like, you gotta kind of feel sad because, I mean, he just wanted to go back to the way things were.
Old ways.
I wish Batman were in this movie.
Spider-Man would have been cool.
Where's the Shredder? You'll swear to me. Someone like you. Someone who'll rattle the pizza. rattle the nunchucks.
Yes.
A fellow chugger, eh? Alfred!
Instead of a Joker card, it's a Shredder card.
Can I persuade you to take a pizza with you, sir?
I'll get pizza.
Worth, I know you've got to go, but I'm going to go ahead and preemptively ask. Usually I wait till the end of the episode or the end of the movie discussion to ask somebody this, but Worth, your personal final thoughts on Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles?
We kind of covered it earlier. It's still an awesome movie. It holds up after 20 years.
It really is insane.
It's
going to be 20 years as of about 3 months after this airs.
Yeah, and it's just, this would be a movie that you'll watch all the time and still, like, find something new to enjoy about it.
It's true.
Yeah. It's like, we noticed just this viewing that apparently part of the social deviant circle is to read Archie comics.
Indeed. Well,
this is how we do it.
This is how we do it. Spin that wheel!
Alright, that's another favorite moment. Spin that wheel.
Yeah, the soundtrack is a great moment. We'll probably talk about the soundtrack a bit more at length. But, Worthles, it was good to have you for the first half of this discussion or thereabouts.
It was fun.
I mean, I know Nick and I might have a few more things to say, probably not much, but we'll see you for two.
Sounds good. Later tonight.
Yes, later tonight, yes. And,
sounds good.
He'll be here after the jump, as they say on the internet.
But
Worth Beasley, ladies and gentlemen.
See you all later.
Yes, yes. But Mr. Nick Melton, as Worth Beasley departs, we've never had a guest, like, leave. It's like a talk show. We've never had a guest leave in the middle of the podcast. It's kind of weird, and in a weird way, kind of, like, novel. But, not that we don't enjoy Worth's opinions, because he is a wonderful addition, and we are very happy to have him back for 2, 3, and TMNT coming up. But Nick, any further things you'd like to discuss about this film? I mean, we could talk about the soundtrack.
Well, I mean,
soundtrack,
we could talk about it a little bit. Yeah, let's talk about the soundtrack. Why not?
The soundtrack, I don't know if they have a listing here. Oh, they have a
Teenage
whole...
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the original
motion picture
soundtrack.
They have a whole page for it. The soundtrack is pretty interesting. We have...
It looks like they only have one selection from the score on the original... No, two from the score on the soundtrack album.
They do.
Shredder's Suite and Splinter's Tale 1 and Splinter's Tale 2.
But I think we're also supposed to count Turtle Rhapsody as performed by Orchestra on the Half Shell.
Yeah.
Well. But this movie has a charming soundtrack. A lot of songs... And artists that, I mean, they don't have that big of careers, but these are all songs that if you heard them, they would make you feel happy. Like, we have, of course, MC Hammer, who plays heavily in two songs on this soundtrack. MC Hammer with This Is What We Do, as Worth mentioned a few minutes ago. And then we have him joined by Partners in Rhyme. I don't know why they have Crime with a K here, but I'm pretty sure it's Rhyme. I could be wrong about that. We're going to click on this link.
Maybe it used to be Partners in Rhyme?
Okay, maybe it was just Partners in Crime. That's weird. Well, anyway, the point is he's a member, or he's the leader of that band, and they sing, of course, the song T-U-R-T-L-E, Power. We also have 9.95 by Spunkadelic, which is the song that plays at the end when Casey Jones and April O'Neil are kissing, which makes Donatello yelling 9.95 a bit more of a product placement.
Right.
Than an actual reaction. we also have the song Family by Riff. I'm going to assume it's something that's played at the the East Warehouse on Laidman Island, where you'll find your answers there. And also,
make him sound like Peter Griffin.
I can't help it. Peter Griffin has become almost my default New England accent, which is kind of sad. And then
we love you, Seth MacFarlane.
We do.
I wish he was in this movie. I wish he was Shredder.
I wish he was in everything, Nick. But we also have Spin That Wheel. Spin That Wheel! Spin That Wheel by High Tech 3. And then we have Let the Walls Come Down by Johnny Kemp. A lot of these...
Every Heart Needs a Home.
By St. Paul. These are all just songs. And I actually have the soundtrack, courtesy of my good friend Warwick Beasley here. Or who was here, as it were. I have the complete soundtracks of the first three films. We're working on getting access to the fourth when I edit the fourth. And these are all wonderful soundtracks. Just really, really fucking great. What else is there to say? There's a DVD release, there's production.
Do you want to mention the really badass DVD release of the series?
I should, actually. And I will say that we aren't using that particular DVD release, but once again, Mr. Warwick Beasley does have it. He bought it right after we saw the screening at the Mixtape Series. He was like, he couldn't help it. He needed to own them, man.
I wish I'd seen that on the big screen.
This
is a movie, if you ever get a chance to see it on a big screen, you know, if you ever have the sort of people in your community who do these little things where they film older movies on the big screen, do it.
You should definitely go see
it. This movie would look great on a big screen.
DVD
collection.
Yeah, thank you. My brain just died for a second. The DVD collection, they've recently released, in commemoration of the 25th anniversary, that's what it's about, a new DVD collection that includes all four of the theatrically released films, and I want to say a disc of the cartoon. I could be wrong about that.
Would be amazing.
It would be amazing.
I love the cartoon.
I actually have the fourth season, the complete fourth season.
Ooh.
I do, which is actually a really good season. It was the first season they released in like a big multi-disc set. Which is why I bought it. This is years ago. But, the DVD release, the great part of it is that all these DVDs, they don't come in their own cases. It's an upside and a downside because of where they actually are kept, is in this, round tin DVD case with multiple flaps, not just for those four discs, but for flaps for any other discs you want to put in there. It's a collector's DVD case.
Basically. Oh wow, that's cool.
Yes, it looks like a sewer lid with the Ninja Turtles logo on it.
Yeah, the Ninja Turtles manhole, basically.
Yeah, and it's really great. And my, like I said, Warwick Beasley has it.
I would keep Ninja Turtles TV episodes in there.
I would as well. But he's got that going for him, so good for Workles. The other thing is that box set also comes with a series of four masks, the four color masks of the characters, which, sadly, as I mentioned, he didn't get the collection until the week after we saw the movie, so we would have worn the masks to the screening and been those guys, but we didn't get the opportunity. It's kind of sad.
You would have been the guy wearing glasses over
my Donatello mask? Yes, you bet your ass.
Raphael's the blue one, right?
No. Wow.
I thought he was.
Raphael is red, sir.
Oh, I know what I meant to say. I meant to say Leonardo. I'm sorry.
Leonardo is blue. Michelangelo is orange. Donatello is purple.
Raphael is red.
Yes.
I actually did know that. It was just a slip of the tongue.
Understood.
Because they're all named after classical artists.
Indeed they are.
Yeah, but blue is my favorite color now. So, slap in the face of that gay theory.
Yeah.
With the purple... But anyway, I would have won Leonardo since I like blue.
It's an awesome color. What can you say? Any other comments to be made here? Should we look at... I mean, what else is there to look into? I don't think we even paid much attention to the IMDb page beyond looking at the cast.
Do you want to see if there's any...
Goofs?
Yeah, that could be fun.
There's a whole page of goofs, but I gotta tell you...
Oh, there's a ton of them.
I don't want to...
Go through all of them
the way we did with Gremlins, so I'm gonna go ahead and mention some of the ones that I think I've looked at before. So there's a plot hole that simply reads, where do the Ninja Turtles get the money to order pizza?
That's a good plot hole.
That is actually a good question.
Plot hole, if Casey Jones broke the ladder with the garbage truck so the Foot Clan cannot go to the top of the building, how did Splinter go there?
Magic.
Yeah, I mean...
Ninjutsu magic.
I mean, yeah, totally.
But,
Man, that's cool. Revealing mistake when Michelangelo yells as he's fighting on the street. In the last scene, you can see the actor through the mouth opening.
Oh my gosh, I feel like I should go back and look at that.
A lot of crew or equipment visible things. When Raphael wakes up in the bathtub, there is a moment where Donatello laughs at a joke. As he does so, he tilts his head back and opens his mouth, revealing the face of the actor underneath the costume.
I really need to go back and look at these. I do.
When Donatello is skateboarding in the sewers to meet with Michelangelo while Mikey is waiting for the pizza, you can see for a couple of frames a human hand, which should be Donatello's, move in and then out of the camera viewpoint while he is doing a spin.
Okay. Much like my reaction to the mistakes and flaws, if any there were, about the film Mega Shark versus Giant Octopus.
Amazing film.
You know what I'm going to say? I don't mind.
Yeah.
Yep.
Because just like that one, this movie is made of awesome.
Made of awesome, made of lovability.
Yeah, I mean,
what about your favorite moments and whatnot?
Because I feel like we've just been going on and on about the film as a whole, but we haven't really talked about specific moments, really.
I do have some favorite moments. I am a big fan of... I am, much like Worth, a big fan of any of most Casey Jones-centric scenes. I'm a big fan of... I love that line about, you know, looks like some big turtle in a trench coat.
You're going to LaGuardia, right?
I love that so fucking much. I love... I love this whole movie. I can't really pick. It's like picking for my children. I can't pick the best moments of this movie because they are all awesome.
I would like to comment that nobody in New York seems to care or notice anything about these, like, turtles. Like, even when Raphael's in the trench coat and hat walking around, nobody seems to notice that it's a giant turtle in a trench coat.
Well, because it's New York, and I guess the idea is supposed to be, New York's such a wacky town.
And
to be a fat guy in a suit.
And the pizza delivery guy doesn't seem to care that he's delivering pizza into a sewer. He's just like, oh, I gotta get a different route.
I think they really are going for that, just the old joke that, like, people who live in New York are so...
Oblivious to every weird sort of cultural thing.
They're so used to crazy shit that, like, nothing can top anything. You know, everything is just as crazy as the next.
Yeah, and one thing I did want to ask about, because it did actually kind of confuse me in some scenes.
All right.
Danny, the redhead kid...
Charles Pennington's son, yes.
Yes. He is not related to April O'Neil, right?
No.
Okay, because there's that one scene where she's in the apartment with Charles Pennington, and he's, like, saying, oh, he always puts on headphones when he wants to ignore me. I'm like, wait, are they related? What? But I guess not. But why then would a reporter just be going to her boss's house?
No, he was at her house.
Why was his son there, then?
Because he was hanging out with his father.
Oh! Okay.
This is a really simple answer, Nick.
I know. I must have just not been paying close enough attention.
That's all right.
I was too busy, like, just leaning back and you know, loving the movie.
It's true. I want to look at Movie Connection just for a second.
Followed by references to Taxi.
References to Taxi, Breakers of Wrath, The Lone Ranger, Guns Out, World of Fortune, Rocky, Blues Brothers, Ghostbusters, Moonlighting. That's one of my favorite moments. When they go to the farm in upstate New York where they're recuperating, we have a lot of scenes of April O'Neil and Casey Jones having, you know, witty, quote-unquote, romantic banter, if you will. Or, you know, it's that, you know, oh, I hate you, let's fuck.
Right.
You know, like that old thing you always see in a lot of movies. And, they have an argument, and they both, like, leave a room, both slamming doors. Donatello and Michelangelo are sitting on the couch eating chips, and one of them turns to the other and says, it's kind of like Moonlighting, isn't it? Which, I love a good Moonlighting reference, I gotta tell you. I'm a big fan of, like, a Moonlighting reference or the concept of a Sam and Diane couple.
Right.
I love that concept. I do.
Oh, Rocky. Rocky references.
Indeed, I mentioned. And Critters, and... It's been referenced in a lot of things.
It's been referenced in Clerks by your idol, Kevin Smith.
It's a video at the video rental store. It's also referenced in the 2007 TMNT, because there's a Shredder helmet on the shelf in the first movie, and most of the second, of course. When did that come on? I feel like
Turtles that... Forever 2009?
This was a documentary that was going to come on... sometime this week, and a lot of my friends watched it, and I wish I had known it was when it was going to come on, because now I really want to see it.
I'm sure you'll be able to find it.
It's a documentary about the history of Ninja Turtles and the legacy that they've had for the past 25 years.
And I remember when I was a kid having a lot of Ninja Turtles action figures, just because, you know, that's just one of those things that my generation grew up with, that cartoon especially.
Yeah.
Fun times.
You know what I'm realizing, Nick?
What?
That I'm really worried about now?
What?
My computer, which is where we're recording this, is doing that thing where the fan is on. And much like I think it was the Hocus Pocus episode, now every time we stop talking, there's going to be dead silence, and then as soon as we start talking, they're going to hear the fan running again.
Oh.
It really is kind of a bother. I think when we record for two, we will we'll remember to sit it on top of something so it can be, you know, aerated or whatever. You know?
Right.
What are you doing, Nick?
Oh, I'm lifting the computer up to cool it down.
Oh, that's not what you have to do. You actually have to plug it. It's the back of it that gets hot.
Oh.
But don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. It won't turn off fast enough for us to... The point is, we apologize, ladies and gentlemen. I don't think
for
it was...
the fan.
I don't think it was running throughout the entire first half of this episode. But, I mean, have we covered most of what we want to cover about this movie?
I think so. I think...
What else can we tell you other than it's made of awesome, and then it's just the start of one wonderful four-movie journey?
Yeah.
I do feel like Shredder could have been a more complex and awesome villain. He's sort of underused.
A little
bit. That's like my only complaint with this, because Shredder is such an iconic villain, and he's such an awesome villain, that you really want to see him, like, break out. And you were talking, actually, we'll just mention this, you were talking about something about the movie trying to be a bit more realistic, and yet Shredder has this really elaborate costume.
Yeah.
Oh, how do you know that it was supposed to be realistic, and where did you...
Just, but also because it's just such a far cry from the cartoonish, humor-driven films of the second, third, and fourth. You know, the fourth is actually a bit closer in tone to this one. Much, much darker and much more serious. It's all because this one is serious. It's because it's serious, it's because we have Raphael screaming damn at random intervals. I mean, it does kind of indicate that they're trying to go for some sort of dark realism.
And yet, Shredder has this incredibly elaborate...
Exactly. Costume. I mean, I know it's in the comic books, and who am I to complain, because I love this movie. I love this movie, I do. It's just a thing I'm saying. That's all.
Okay. I was just wondering.
So I guess we're done with this. Any final thoughts on Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles?
I hadn't seen this in a very long time, and I was delighted yet again by this movie. I'd watched it... a few years ago, with one of my other best friends, we did a marathon of 1, 2, and 3, and it was delightful. But I hadn't remembered how delightful it was. So thank you for letting me
know. Oh, you're more than welcome. And you've got three more to go, sir.
Woo!
And yes. I haven't seen the fourth one.
You
so
have,
I'm
neither has
to it.
Neither has Worth Beasley, so this is going to be an interesting experience once we get to four. But coming up after the jump, as they say on the internet, I hate that phrase, but I'm going to use it. I really hate that phrase.
Coming up after the jump?
Yeah, I hate it so much. But anyway, coming up after... the wonderful hold music that we use in every episode, basically almost every episode of the OUP, we'll be discussing Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, Secret of the Ooze, from...
It's kind of like Ghostbusters 2, where ooze is a factor in the plot.
It's slime, yeah. We'll be back after that little snippet of A Man and a Woman, with discussion of the second film
in
the series.
What is Ninja Turtles the next mutation?
I guess I'll answer it. Thanks for interrupting my...
I'm sorry.
It's okay.
I just noticed on IMDb, it says that the sequels to Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles includes Ninja Turtles, The Next Mutation, between Ninja Turtles 3 and TMNT.
Ninja Turtles, The Next Mutation is not canon, contrary to what that will tell you. Ninja Turtles, The Next Mutation is a live-action TV series produced by Saban that in many ways was a spinoff of Power Rangers in Space. Come on, Fox, they actually have a Ninja Turtles Power Rangers in Space crossover episode, which is exciting from a fan standpoint, but it was a rape of the Ninja Turtles legacy.
Okay.
That is all that was. I don't know what to do here, because I had...
I feel bad for throwing you off.
I had a really great throw to the music there, Nick.
Oh, well.
You son of a...
You son of a turtle. That doesn't really work.
We'll see you after the jump. And we're back. And guess who else is back? Worth Beasley rejoins us.
So again?
I'm also, once again, Nick Melson.
Hi, dudes.
And me, Jeff Heatherly. Honestly, it's only been about 30 seconds in your time, listeners. And we are back to discuss...
but an eternity here.
it has been a couple of hours, actually. But ladies and gentlemen, it is time to continue our journey through these wonderful films with from 1991, directed by Michael Pressman. This is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, The Secret of the Ooze.
Ooze.
I know you and I thought of that at the same time.
Well done, gentlemen. But this is a delightful film, as was the first. They're all wonderful. They really, truly are. But where to begin with this one? We can talk about some changes in the cast, since we're basically working with the same people, most for the most part. Let's see. I think we have the same people inside the suits. Let's see here. We'll talk about the new cast members here. We have Paige Turco taking over the role of April O'Neil, a role that she would keep in 2 and 3. We have David Warner, beloved British actor David Warner, who you might remember from Tron and Titanic, and is the voice of some villain in Freakazoid. I never watched Freakazoid, so I don't really remember which one they were talking about.
I can look it up on the
IMDb, the Internet Movie Database.
Wait a minute, go up, 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 up. Doctor Who Dreamland.
Yes, it's a animated Doctor Who miniseries. It's running right now, I believe. Word in which he has a voice. What was his villain on Freakazoid? The Loeb. Yes, the Loeb. But he is a beloved British actor. He's been in a lot of things. He was in Sweeney... that's not the same Sweeney Todd.
I was looking at that, yeah.
He was on Conviction in 6 episodes, just like Elias Koteas was in that one. let's see here, also...
Planet of the Apes.
He was in the remake of Planet of the Apes, indeed, as Sandar. Let's see, he was the voice of Ra's al Ghul on Batman Beyond, and this is true, and on Batman the Animated Series.
Nice.
I knew I remembered that, or something to that effect.
I missed that show. He was Gargoyles.
He's on Gargoyles?
Gargoyles is awesome.
That's one thing about the cast members of these movies. They all seem to be finding a lot of people who've done a lot of voice work, which is an interesting thing. But he's just to say he's a very respected, very renowned guy who's been in a lot of things. But let's see, David Warner is Professor Jordan Perry, the scientist who is sort of offhandedly responsible for the Turtles' being. He works for a organization known as TGRI, who is the organization who was responsible for the ooze, and, well, there you have it. And now we get into the models, or the people inside the turtle suits. We have Mark Casso as Leonardo. He also had a cameo as a member of the newsroom staff at the news station. I think he's the guy on the phone who's like, there's a guy on the phone. I think he said his name is Donnie. That's him.
That's cool.
Michelin Sisti returns as Michelangelo and Soho Man.
A man in Soho.
Yes. We have,
that eliminates a lot of choices.
We have Leif Tilden. I think it was Leif Tilden in the first as well as Donatello and Foot Ninja number 3. And we also have Ken Scott as Raphael, and he's credited as Ken Traum. But he does not have an actual cameo anywhere else. Returning, we of course have Kevin Clash voicing Splinter. We have Francois Chau as the Shredder. Francois Chau... is that really?
I don't think Francois Chau was Shredder in the first one.
He was not, but guess who he was in recent memory? Of course, you know, the television viewers will know him as Dr. Pierre Chang on the television series Lost.
Mm-hmm.
He's the fellow who's in all those Dharma Initiative instructional videos. He's been in a couple things. He has a lot of guest appearances and various things of that nature.
I forgot that was his name.
And he was in JAG and Walker, Texas Ranger.
All these
Walker,
people have
Texas
these...
And Nash Bridges.
All these people have these horrible...
Wing Commander 4.
Guest appearances.
Baywatch.
Okay, let's talk about some things that
MacGyver.
Don't...
MacGyver.
Let's talk about some things that aren't shameful, Nick. Movies that he's been in, like
Melrose Place.
He was in some movies.
Lethal Weapon 4.
Nick, let me read.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm going to keep doing the shameful thing.
Well, he was in Beverly Hills Ninja, which you can call shameful or whatever you want to. But
that was an awesome movie.
He was in Beverly Hills Ninja as Izumo. Let's see here. I'm going to just run past these as fast as I can. I don't trust you, Nick.
He's in Adventures of Briscoe County Jr.
Okay, that is something to be discussed. Adventures of Briscoe County Jr., Bruce Campbell, sci-fi western, awesome.
Yes.
Let's see. Yeah, Tatsu is once again played by Toshihiro Obata, but this time we actually get to hear him speak. It's actually him speaking and not someone speaking for him. We have Raymond Serra returning as Chief Stearns, and he doesn't yell nearly enough in this movie.
Unfortunately.
We don't get a great line like, "Are you trying to tell me how to do my job?" We don't get that in this one. We get in the suits. We have some new mutants in this film. New mutants, like in Marvel Comics. We have some new mutants who were created after Shredder, who is back from the dead.
Hey, hey.
We'll have to talk about
We'll have to talk about the logistics of that, but he's back and he's got a new plan involving the ooze. He creates some mutant creatures of his own. A wolf. I don't know which one is which. We have Toka and Razar, but they are a wolf and a snapping turtle. I don't know which one is which. The point is, they are what they are. And they are played by Mark Ginther as Razar and Kirk Bryant as Toka. I'm pretty sure that's not the voice people. Who else do we have? We have, there are some interesting cameos in this film, including the one we already knew. But we have Curb Your Enthusiasm star Susie Essman as Soho Woman. I think they might be the married couple.
They might
couple.
Be the cab people.
No. I think they're the married couple who meets April O'Neil at her door at the very beginning.
Oh, okay.
The thing about, you know, they're like downstairs neighbors and they keep hearing their ropes and they're like, all that jumping and yelling.
Right.
Of course, it could be the turtles doing their katas. Anybody else? We have Mark Doerr as Freddy, a new member of the Channel 3 news team who helps April out. He's a gopher, basically, and he falls in with the Foot Clan.
He reminds me of Ethan from Lost.
He has a very Ethan way about him. Let's see. The old man and the old woman are played by David Pressman and Sasha Pressman, who may very well be Michael Pressman's parents or something.
Right.
Let's see. Anyone else? All the voices. We should talk about the voices.
Look.
What? That's what I was about to say.
Well,
I said voices.
Well, yeah, but you said that we got to hear him speak.
Oh, that's what you were pointing at.
Yeah.
Apparently Tatsu was not his own voice this time. It was, once again, Michael McConaughey. I don't want to say McConaughey.
Can I do the bottom one?
You can when we get to it.
Okay.
Okay. But we'll say this at least for Tatsu's voice this time around. He was much better dubbed.
Yes.
He sounded a lot more natural. But
in the other movie, he was talking, but his mouth wouldn't be moving.
Indeed. But
as with most Japanese films.
But anyway, returning to the voice cast, we have Robbie Rist, once again, TV's Cousin Oliver, the Brady Bunch, as Michelangelo. We have Brian Tochi, once again, as Leonardo. We have Laurie Fasso as Raphael. That's a new one, but he sounds exactly like
he
the other one.
He does sound a lot like this.
And we have, instead of Corey Feldman, we have Adam Carl as Donatello. He's okay. He's a hoot in his own right.
Yes.
But he's just not Corey Feldman.
Should be Adam Wee.
Nobody messes with Adam Wee. We have voicing Shredder. I guess that isn't Marvin Candle doing his own voice.
You would think it would be.
We have David McSharon as the Shredder. We have, once again, Michael McConaughey as Tatsu. And go ahead, Nick.
Frank Welker.
As both.
As Razar and Taka.
Yes, as both.
I love Frank Welker.
What else has he done?
Oh, he does...
He's one of the most well-known voicemen in the business.
He does all, like, the animal character voices. Like, he did a bunch of, like, creature things. He does, like, the voice of Nibbler in Futurama.
Oh, nice.
And he did a lot of the Gremlin sound effects in Gremlins.
Yeah.
Oh, very nice.
He gets around.
He's all around very well-known.
He does both basically creature sound effects, and he's very good at it.
We also have here, in terms of those cameos, we have Michael Jai White, the man who would later play Spawn, as audience man. Actually, I think he may actually be the male of the interracial couple we see at the dance club later in the film.
That makes sense.
And we have comedian Earthquake. I know who Earthquake is. You may not, but I do. As a disc jockey and as himself, Vanilla Ice, providing this film with its most notable song, The Ninja Rap.
Maybe in the series.
Maybe in the series, indeed. I did just realize, though, I missed out on one of the biggest additions to the cast, and I need to mention him now because he is awesome, and that is, of course, Ernie Reyes Jr. as Kino, a new young ally to the Turtles. A teenager guy. He delivers pizzas, and he also enjoys some fine martial arts.
He doesn't really come in handy that much.
Not really.
What he was involved in the first movie somehow, though, wasn't he? Wasn't he like the fight coordinator or something?
I would like to say either he or his father. The Reyes family is full of just martial arts folk. He didn't have. He actually wasn't in having anything to do. Oh no, wait. He was the fight coordinator and stunt double for Donatello in the first.
Yeah, I knew it was something like that. With one of the turtles.
So he was. I know him and love him because of his presence in the film Surf Ninjas, a wonderful film that is just a million pounds of awesome. What do you?
And
noticing?
He's involved in the utility stunts for the upcoming James Cameron film Avatar.
Indeed, he is actually a very very renowned stuntman and martial arts coordinator in films.
Alice in Wonderland in 2010. He's doing the stunts for that.
Stunts are going to be.
Yeah,
in
I
there.
Don't care about that.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I've told you that movie is already overhyped. I'm already done with it. But in terms of his acting roles, he's acted while doing his martial arts. The most recent thing most people would know him from is... Actually, I forgot about that one, too. But he was in The Rundown with The Rock and Sean William Scott. He's the native guy who just kicks the crap out of The Rock.
Nice.
And then he was in Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull as a cemetery warrior. I remember seeing one of those natives, and he looked exactly... And I was like, that looks like
Ronnie
Reyes Jr.
I didn't recognize him.
Indeed, it was. And he was also in Rush Hour 2. He was
I thought we were avoiding shameful things.
I'm not going to say that's a shameful thing because it's Ernie Reyes Jr. doing awesome martial arts. I'm not going to hold that against
him. Was in Red Sonja.
Red Sonja, indeed. He was also guest starred on an episode of VIP.
VIP. Yes. Wow.
But and his next US TV scheduled appearance is going to be in an episode of Charmed from season 5,
which is in tights. A
horrible name. I think we actually have a picture here on IMDb of Ernie Reyes Jr. from his appearance in The Rundown when he's kicking the crap out of The Rock. There he is with his shaved head and his shirtlessness. And here's another picture. I think this was him actually. Yeah, look at that.
Wow.
Look how ripped he is, by the way.
Wow.
He's kind of like I wouldn't call him the poor man's or the rich man's. He's just kind of like Mark Dacascos for the same price. You know, that's basically it.
I would like to see Mark Dacascos and Ernie Reyes Jr. in one movie.
A
buddy movie where they become enemies and fight at the end only to reconcile.
That'd be amazing.
I would pay to see that.
But we've talked up a storm about the cast. Let's talk plot. The second film, is, of course, finds Turtles. We're going to assume it's like a year later. I'm actually going to look into this right now. At the beginning of the film, Turtles with challenged by Shredder himself, falling into the garbage truck. They actually don't mention it. I mean, I wonder if we are to assume that this film, because it was released about
a year later.
And exactly a year later... See, March 22nd, 1991, almost exactly a year later.
Wow.
Maybe we are to assume that he's just been laying in that garbage dump for a year, surviving on scraps and slowly.
We should explain the we just sort of mumbled over what we're talking about, but what we're referring to, of course, is Shredder. When we say he, and he was, as we mentioned, thrown into a garbage truck at the end of
the first one.
And the second one, we were trying to figure out when it takes place, a month later, a year later, because they've got this swanky apartment now, and...
Well, it's not there, they're just living with April.
They're living with April, but she's somehow managed to find and completely decorate this swanky apartment.
And a new job,
and all this other stuff. And apparently, this whole time, Shredder's just been sitting there in the garbage dump so that he can dramatically pop his hand out of the garbage and go,
Reach for the city
like he's gonna... take hold and be...
Do Tatsu's attack symbol.
that's one of the main things. I'll actually go ahead and look this up. Nick, when we first started talking about this movie, he wanted to know if they had it listed on as a goof on the IMDb page. Let's see. Plot holes... Actually, no, they don't. Plot holes, the only plot hole they have is at the end of the film, Splinter quotes the Ninja rap song despite the fact that he wasn't in the club scene to hear Vanilla Ice rap it.
Yeah, I said that too. Apparently he was there.
He's always there.
True. Splinter, he's mastered the art of ninja.
Splinter is everywhere. Splinter is a part, he binds us and penetrates us, which sounds terrible.
Splinters
are
everywhere.
Force.
Yeah. Yes. He is the force.
Splinter.
But anyway,
really looking forward to them saying in this movie, but they didn't.
But anyway, the turtles are living temporarily above ground with April O'Neil in her new swanky apartment. Still trying to find a new place underground, but having a hard time of it because in this market, there's just no good market for good subterranean housing.
That's quoted by
Donatello. Yeah, when he's reading the real estate pages.
With this cup of coffee.
With this cup of coffee. I love that image. I told you. I love that image of him with the cup of coffee.
I need Donatello to have glasses on to complete the whole outfit.
We got to find glasses big enough for those massive heads of theirs. So they've been living with April, and the Foot Clan is still around. They just the actual crime wave they were perpetrating isn't so much so prevalent in the city anymore.
All the teens left them.
All the teens left
them. Led by Sam Rockwell.
Yeah, Sam Rockwell and all his gang of teens went off to do, like, community charity work or something.
And Casey Jones seems to have completely vanished.
Yeah, it's either a retcon or he's just like, I don't know, maybe he left town to go be a badass somewhere for a while. Like maybe he has a foreign exchange badass program.
He had to play against Coach Bombay's hockey team.
Yes.
I don't know.
He joined the Icelandic hockey team in the 1994 Junior Goodwill Games. Oh my gosh.
That needs to happen.
That does need to happen. But Shredder comes back through whatever inexplicable means he does, and wants to get rid of the turtles for once and for all. And basically from there, it's a basic plot. He wants to get rid of them. He creates these two new mutants, this wolf and this snapping turtle. And it's just Turtles versus Shredder once again, with Kino on him for the ride. We've got this professor providing, you know, charming British science talk. And then we have Vanilla Ice performing a song at a dance club. I mean, really, that's the movie.
Yeah.
I mean, unless you can
do think... they really explain what the secret of the ooze is?
No.
Is there a secret of the ooze, or is it just...
Maybe the secret of the ooze is
I didn't notice
it was a mistake 15 years ago.
That it was a mistake, that it was TGRI and April happened to be interviewing Professor Perry. I mean, maybe that's the secret. I don't think that's important.
It's called The Secret of the Ooze.
I know.
It has no secret.
It should be The Secret about the Ooze.
Oh, that'd just be... That would... That's a stupid
secret. A secret which mildly involves ooze.
Yeah.
I think that might be a bit too wordy of a title, but...
Yeah. I actually want to mention one more person in the cast, because I can't believe I forgot to mention him earlier.
Yeah, I thought you were going to mention him at the very end when we got to that scene.
Well, I mean, I don't think, like I said, I don't think this the second one requires so much plot summary, because it's a very simple...
to the first one.
The first one was an origin, and you kind of needed to tell a lot of the story in the description. This one, it really is the standard just hero versus villain story again.
True.
It's just, we've already established that Shredder's a bad dude, we've already established that the Turtles are awesome, they already established, you know, everything. They got their awesome new lair.
Train station.
That is one thing we should mention. They found a new abandoned subway station with all these, like, stained glass domes and stuff. It's really awesome. It's the same lair they have in the third one, as you'll see coming up next week's episode. I mean, that's awesome. We should mention, I mean, it's the standard hero versus villain plot. So, of course, the villain is vanquished at the end. But not after ingesting a vial of the ooze himself, which does not only make him grow in size, it also makes his costume get sharper, blacker, more armored, and badass looking. As I mentioned, apparently the ooze can not only mutate the physical, like, body structure of a person, but also their clothes.
Apparently.
But I should mention all this. This is all awesome to me, because the Super Shredder, who is just a great visual, is played by a fella I know very well from the world of professional wrestling by the name of Kevin Nash. You folks might be aware of him. Kevin Nash is a guy who's been around forever. He was in WWF, back when it was still WWF, as the character Diesel. And then he was in WCW as himself, Kevin Nash. Big Sexy Kevin Nash, they called him. And then he was, and then now he's in that horrible, horrible rape of a wrestling federation by the name of TNA, where he's playing himself and just getting older and his knees are getting more shot. Really depressing.
What's his character in The Wrestler?
Oh, gosh. Randy the Ram Robinson.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's definitely...
Randy the Ram Robinson is Mickey Rourke.
He plays like that kind of
character. We're saying that he's basically the same character.
He's getting older and older.
Man, why wasn't I paying attention?
Why weren't you? We're sitting right next to you.
Yes. I'm sorry. Not that I wasn't paying attention.
Do you grow weary of our whimsy?
No, I just misheard what he said.
Okay. We've talked about plot, we've talked about cast. Let's start talking about generalities. I still don't want to start with my comments. I'll give the floor to Nick this time to kick things off.
Ah! Responsibility.
Let's see here. What's awesome about this movie? Everything.
Yeah, everything.
I feel like they made Michelangelo even more, like,
kooky.
Kooky. He's like, he's just constantly wisecracking all the time, and I feel like they didn't do that in the first one.
Well, no, because the first one, as even the Wikipedia page will note, was a far darker movie. This one really gives in more to the comedic, childlike, family-oriented side of the Turtles. The first one really was... The first one, like a lot of people have said, that the first movie is the most faithful adaptation of the original comic books that has ever been made. Not even the fourth one, which we'll be discussing in next week's episode, is as close to it. But yeah, I mean, he is certainly more whimsical, and he has a lot of great lines. He was always there with the jokes.
Right.
But I mean... Man, today the lives of man and woman don't amount to hill beans in this world, Elsa. That's why you're not going to get on that plane. Yeah.
A little too rash.
Oh, gosh. One of the best parts of this film. At midpoint through the film, Raphael is captured by the Foot Clan, and the Turtles go to rescue him in this junkyard, and they see him bound to a pole. And the whole scene has been going on where they'll walk into one spot of the junkyard, and they'll say something like, "It's really quiet. Maybe a little too quiet. It's really, oh gosh, really dark. Maybe a little too dark," or something like that.
That was too easy.
Too easy.
That was too easy. Too easy. Maybe a little too easy. And then they walk around the corner, and there's Raph. And he's like, "Oh gosh, it's Raph. Yeah, maybe a little too Raph." Which, I gotta tell you, it's gotten to the point where if ever the expression that needs to be made is a little too quiet, you've heard me do this.
Yeah, I have.
I will actually just
say, I'm fine with it.
It's a little too Raph. It's a little too Raph in here.
Which I'm fine with. That needs to be a shirt.
It does need to be a shirt. So many things need to be a shirt.
This is true.
This is a running theme with myself, and I think you've joined in recent times. I need to just open a t-shirt company with random shit. I really do.
I'm sure you'd sell a lot of them, too.
I bet I would. But see, too Raph. Just to go. Since we're going to talk about great lines and great moments, I'll go ahead and talk about like one of my favorite lines in this movie. There's a scene midway through the film, after the Shredder has released Taka and Razar into the streets to just cause general mayhem for a bit on this one city block. I'm going to assume they don't go anywhere else because like that's the only place the police go to the next day. But Taka and Razar go out and like knock over some telephone poles and things, and over in the distance, an elderly couple, the ones we mentioned earlier, played by, we're going to assume, Michael Pressman's parents or something, are getting into a cab, and the husband says, "Sophie, look, those creatures are destroying those telephone poles." And she says, "Let them get their own cab." I love it. That is this movie's equivalent of the thing about, you know, looks like some big turtle in a trench coat. You're going LaGuardia, right? That's the exact equivalent. Let's see here. Other great moments, lines, guys? Just keep them coming. Come on, pop them out.
Dandelions.
They never bring back those giant flowers ever again. They might.
Apparently they stopped growing.
Yeah, well, it was just that one patch of land, I guess. But we should talk about Freddy for a bit. Freddy, once again, played by... Who was he played by? Oh, it's in the more page of the IMDb page. Freddy, played by Mark Doerr, who I'll also look into his other acting roles since the film. Hasn't done much. He was on an episode of Mad Men. Mad Men.
Nice.
Everybody loves Mad Men. He has a big gap in his acting. He did this movie in 1991 and didn't act again until 2007.
Wow.
When he started doing like TV roles, and he was in an episode of Criminal Minds, an episode of Numbers, an episode of Bones, an episode of the short-lived detective series 11th Hour, starring... was it Rufus Sewell? Is that his name? The show that I like to call Detective Count Adhemar.
Rufus. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
From A Knight's Tale.
Yeah.
He's on an episode of Leverage, on an episode of The Unit, but most recently, his most recent TV
he's
role.
He's on some pretty well-known shows
he's
now.
He's been on some well-known and mostly very well-respected shows.
Yeah.
And Mad Men, you can't find a more respected show these days.
This is true.
So, good for him getting back into the business. He's aged a bit. Gray hair, looks a little bit like Will Forte now. Mark Doerr, how about that? But anyway, the character of Freddy, though. Freddy, who I think is intended to take the place of... I feel like there was some character in the first one that he's like pretty much the exact same character.
Danny?
Yeah, I guess he's the Danny of the piece. Yeah. So he doesn't have any like redemptive moments.
He doesn't have a father.
He doesn't have a father. You need a mommy very, very badly!
Awesome.
Completely awesome. Different movie.
Good reference, though. Yeah. I appreciate it.
Who are those kids Hook's got? Give him a chance!
Oh, there you are, Peter.
We've got to cover that movie someday. That might be what we cover on my birthday.
That's awesome.
That movie is a big deal to me. If you don't know what we're talking about, we'll just leave it secret until we decide to cover it. But understand it. If you did understand it, we thank you for laughing with us. Freddy, like, the character... But even though he's just a rip-off and a retread of Danny, he's also really poorly acted.
Yes.
And he's very articulate for like a gopher at a TV station who happens to moonlight as a foot soldier. Right. You know, like, just, you know... He finds these overgrown, mutated dandelions, is worth mentioning, and he picks one up and says, "Dandelions."
And looks off in the distance.
Looks off in the distance, off in the middle distance.
It makes you wonder what kind of past Freddy might have had.
Maybe he had a bad experience with some rock candy.
Maybe.
Nice.
I don't know if Worth gets that reference, but...
I don't think I do.
You may... Actually, no, I'm able to make this reference, because the episode that I'm about to mention will have aired at this point. You recall in the film The Marine?
I do remember The Marine.
The character who had the bad experience with the rock candy.
That they don't explain very well.
They don't explain very well, and then when they do, you're like, really, that's all it was? That's all it was about the rock candy? gosh. Freddy, he's such a throwaway character, but he's just so lame, I felt the need to mention him. My master has a message for your friends. He's so overpronounced. It's really unnecessary.
True. I really expected him to slap her, like they did in the first,
one.
Our master sends a message. Shut it.
Not really that ominous a message.
It really is.
Shut it.
Well, he's just saying that she needs to stop talking about
that. Well, yeah, but you could say, if you don't start talking, you'll die.
With club sauce.
Yeah.
I want to hear Shredder say, shut it.
Shut it.
Pretty much.
Now I'm thinking about our whole thing about James Earl Jones.
Jones, yeah. Who are we?
Why don't I have a dream of Harrison Ford?
Yeah, James Earl Jones is April O'Neil.
James Earl Jones is April O'Neil.
Oh, the things that you folks miss when you're not watching the movies with us.
If you could have a dream cast for this movie with strange people like James Earl Jones as April O'Neil, who would be in it?
Oh, gosh.
Bob Hoskins would be in it somewhere.
Bob Hoskins could be... No. Reginald Bell Johnson would be Chief Stearns.
Yes.
He would be Chief Stearns in both of the movies.
Yes.
Bob Hoskins does need to be in it, though. He could be the boss at the news station who's talking about, like, looking ahead. Swimsuits in the 90s?
Yes.
My interest is piqued.
I could sort of see Bob Hoskins doing that.
Let's see. Kino could be Mark Dacascos. Just interchange them. As I said, they're the same guy for the same price.
The 70s Mark Hamill.
Let's just get the entire cast of the first Star Wars in this movie. Let's just do that.
Harrison Ford as Taka. Carrie Fisher as Zahar.
Razar. We'll get the Cantina Band as Vanilla Ice and his posse.
Yes. Yes.
Darth Vader is Shredder, obviously.
Yeah.
Ewan McGregor is Casey Jones.
Ooh, that'd be kind of badass.
Yeah, it would.
You know I'm all about some Ewan McGregor.
Oh, I love Ewan McGregor.
I mean, you remember back before Daniel Craig was James Bond.
I would have so been for Ewan McGregor.
Yeah, that would have been awesome. Although, of course, I don't think it would have worked with the direction they took with James Bond, but if they continued with, like, the way they did with Brosnan.
Yeah. Awesome. I would have gone for it then.
But you know what we're talking about right now? James Bond. We should not be talking about James Bond. You know what we should be talking about? This turtle. Because this movie's awesome.
Yes.
Going
back to favorite lines for a minute, I meant to mention this in the first one, but I'll mention it now because it was mainly from the mixtape series when we went there.
Right.
When April was interviewing Chief Stearns in the beginning,
yes.
When the film jumped, there is a line that Chief Stearns says. He says something, but
he's explaining something, and when we were at the mixtape screening, the film skipped straight to April O'Neil saying, I don't think I'm understanding you entirely, Chief Stearns. Could you explain it again?
It was
in
just
English,
so
perhaps.
Perfect.
It was beyond perfect. You can't write it better.
This is true.
They didn't write it better. A film skipping wrote it better.
This is true.
No disrespect to either any of these movies, but
oh,
we still love them. Lisa Chess as Audience Woman. I'm sorry, I keep looking at this cast list and all the random people. Like, I mean, I wish there were more cameos or like future stars in this movie the way they were in the first one. There's no Sam Rockwell. There is Michael Jai White, as I mentioned. There is Susie Essman. But I mean that's not much.
No.
That's not much. This movie, I mean, this is what it is, and what it is great.
Yes.
Any more points you'd like to make, gentlemen?
It's just amazing.
Yes. I mean, we've kind of covered pretty much everything that we love about it.
Have we covered, like, all the scenes we want to talk about, all the lines?
Beginning when they discover the ooze, the lab they're in.
The lab they're in, yeah. Active!
20 size font.
20 size font.
Eight size
yeah,
for...
Yeah, we mentioned that the reason you could tell that the ooze that hasn't been destroyed is important is because the font they use for the word active is twice the size of the font they use for destroyed.
If not three.
Right.
If not three times the size.
But
it's
that's
really important, guys.
That's a nitpick.
But one thing, though. Where do you put in the quarters?
No deposit, no return. Let's see. Let me look at if there's any more other grades.
Oh, it's like video games, but in 3D.
Oh, gosh. That's so dated.
Every reference in all of these movies dated.
This movie actually skirts dated references pretty well, except for that one part in that one fight where Michelangelo has like four foot soldiers around him and he says, "Can we talk?" Joan Rivers, ladies and gentlemen, circa 1991. I was just looking at memorable quotes on IMDb, and I do feel like I should mention a couple of these, such as, "Babies! They're babies!"
One thing I did remember looking at these quotes when it says, maybe we should try the traditional pre-fight donut.
Yes.
Why don't we talk about the whole, like, we're going to make them unmutate thing. And how violent that actually kind of gets with the
fire extinguisher.
I like how they all question the pre-fight donut, but then they all accepted it. It's like, pre-fight donut?
You also gotta love that these movies exist in a universe where these trained killers, like the foot soldiers and Shredder, who just wants them dead immediately, are willing to wait for a donut.
Yeah. Like, because shouldn't everybody?
Everybody's got time for donuts. Apparently.
There's always room for Jell-O, too.
There certainly is.
they give them these donuts that are supposedly laced with these
ice cubes filled with this anti-mutagen. And they take one each, Toka and Ra's al Ghul, before they discover what's inside the donuts. And then Professor Perry explains that the additive in the chemical, you know, it requires an added degree of CO2. To make it work. If they'd had all... I think that's what he said, and I think I was right about what I said. If they'd eaten all... like, a half dozen of the donuts each, they would have had enough and not needed the CO2 to act as a catalyst. But then when they get to the dance club, they have to shove fire extinguishers down their throats and basically pump their stomachs with CO2.
Yeah.
It is kind of violent. There's no lie about it. It truly is a very violent way to
And then they're just, like, dancing, like, woo!
Yeah, look what we did.
Fire extinguisher antics.
Pretty much. Yeah, because, I mean, like, talk about how violent it was with Toka, Rosa, whichever one the turtle was. You could see, like, his expression and, like, how many times he, like, blinks his eyes or whatever. He's not enjoying it.
No, he's not. But, I mean, do you expect him to? He's being shrunk, basically.
Yeah.
About the end, of course, they're happy being just plain old wolf and snapping turtle.
Yeah, they're very
pretty
calm.
Giant,
and they're still alive.
Turtle.
It's a pretty damn big snapping turtle.
Yeah.
And when he's in its human size, big enough that he can't fit in the manhole.
Yeah.
Although he could. He could just straighten
his arms. Yeah.
But then again, I think that may actually just be a commentary on the fact that in their, you know, Jim Henson's Creature Shop made suits, he probably couldn't straighten his arms without it ripping.
One thing I would also like to point out is that why didn't they just follow them down the sewer once they pulled the turtle out of the manhole?
Because by that point, the sewer... Don't you realize, sir? The sewer is so serpentine. They'd never find them, even if they tried.
It's a magical
sewer.
They
found them in the first one.
Well, that's because they actually followed them.
Yeah. It's a magical sewer because when the
are you
foot
are you literally
there,
stopping at that, sir?
It turns back into the sewer from the first one because of how drastically it changed.
It's true. but yeah, or maybe they're afraid of the alligators in the sewers.
Maybe. This is New York.
It is New York. And the turtles, can deal with alligators.
Especially Ninja Turtles.
They certainly can. But yeah, that's memorable quotes. Here's the thing about this movie, and I kind of use this to lead into the end of the discussion here, is, I mean, this movie is still great.
Mm.
It is a lot less notable than the first one. We are having a lot of a harder time coming up with good things, because, I mean, it is just overall entertaining, but it's just, oh gosh.
What?
It's a fan running again?
No.
Yeah, it is. Son of a bitch! I'm sorry, listeners. As we explained during the recording of the podcast for the first Ninja Turtles film, the microphone on the computer, which we use, is dangerously close to the fan design flaw, in my opinion, of the computer if it overheats or gets too hot. And if you've heard any of the fans underneath any of this, as you did in the Hocus Pocus episode, we sincerely apologize. But the point I was trying to make before the fan pissed me off is that this movie, I mean, it's great, but I mean, yeah, there's not much to say about it. It's just there. Yeah.
It's a movie that's more fun to comment about while you're watching it rather than afterwards.
Yes.
It's true.
Yes.
I mean, it's like,
how 3 is.
Yeah, 3. We'll have to think about what we're going to do with 3. Right. 3 and.
I do remember the last time I watched 3, though, really loving it. So.
And we'll see.
I enjoyed it.
We'll see if it happens again when we discuss 3. But before we do that, let's get some final thoughts here. Final thoughts, Nick Melson, first off, on Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, The Secret of the Ooze.
Apart from the fact that there's no secret, it is a delightful film with lots of humor and lots of cool ninja fights between people in puppets of various size, which is awesome.
Indeed.
And plus, Super Shredder is badass.
But all too short-lived.
All too short-lived. I would really have liked them to have an epic sort of scene.
Battle through the streets of New York.
Yeah. Yes, that could have been really cool had they done something with it, but at least we got to see Super Shredder.
Yeah, yeah.
So... that's my final thought on Secret of the Ooze.
Worth Beasley, final thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, Nick covered it pretty much. It still holds up after technically 19 years for this one.
Yeah.
It didn't intend to set up for the third one, but it did when they found their new hideout, and they used the hideout in the third one, so I like that they continue with that. I like the new April.
Yes, Paige Turco is actually... we mentioned this. I mean, Judith Hogue's got the red hair. Paige Turco is just far more personable and charming.
Yes, yes. As I said before when we were watching it, she reminds me of... what was her name in Mighty Ducks? And
Catherine Erb.
Thank you, Catherine Erb. That's it.
Yes.
Yeah. I am sensing a conspiracy here. I think that Casey Jones ran off with April O'Neil. And they had to make sure that she was still there because they got a new high-paying job for her, so they bioengineered a new April to take her place.
Played by Paige Turco.
That's the secret of the ooze.
Yes. Win.
You know who else would have been an interesting April O'Neil?
Who's that?
Mariska Hargitay.
She drinks Cabernet.
She drinks Cabernet.
What was that role that was off? Oh, the role.
Dulcea.
Yes.
Mighty Morphin Power Rangers movie.
Yeah, that's what we were talking about.
How about that? But my final... is that...
Yeah, that was,
okay.
That was all I had.
All right, well, my final thoughts on this movie, once again, awesome. I think that goes without saying. This one, for many years, and up until... Honestly, up until we saw the mixtape screening of the first one, this has been my favorite. But I gotta tell you, the first one has just kind of been sweeping me off my feet lately.
Right.
I think the first one, like I said, you know, it's much more faithful to the comic books. Mm. It's actually a much better told story, I think. Mm. It's dark, it's as realistic as you're going to get a movie about mutant turtles.
Right.
Who also know ninja and have, you know, catchphrases. You know, I mean, it's... The first one is great. The first one is dark. The second one is more whimsical. The third, as you'll find out, is sort of a mixture of both.
Yeah.
And the fourth is an interesting new CGI animated beast that you'll both be being introduced to tonight, which is very exciting.
Yeah.
Or, as we say, in next week's episode. But yes, I usually at the end of these things, when we conclude, I would usually say, you know, see it. But do I even need to tell you folks this? Either you've seen it already, or if you... I'll tell you, see it, because you should. But, I mean, if you haven't seen it, what's wrong with you? Seriously. I mean, I understand you not seeing 4, maybe even 3, but the first two, you've got to have seen them. I mean, gosh, so important.
Especially if you grew up in our generation.
Oh, definitely.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know about you guys, but Ninja Turtles was a very big part of my childhood.
Yes.
So.
Yes, yes. Ninja Turtles, I mean, they predated Power Rangers. They were Power Rangers before Power Rangers. That's what they were.
That's very true.
And you did mention that they finally got around to doing a Ninja Turtles Power Rangers crossover.
Yes.
Sort of
improperly, but we might discuss that. I would like to kind of conclude the next episode with a bit of a general discussion of the franchise on the whole.
Oh, okay. So we'll talk about that then.
Yeah, we'll talk about the cartoon and the other TV series and the video games, perhaps. We'll go in depth on the second half. But for right now, that's the end of the first half, and we'll go ahead and thank Nick Melton and Worth Beasley for stopping by, even though they're going to be here again for the next two movies. Thank you, folks, for listening. Tune in next week for part two of our retrospective, let's face it, 26th anniversary retrospective of the Ninja Turtles franchise, 20th anniversary of the first film, though. That's pretty great. But thank you for listening, and as always, go experience 7 days. Good night, folks! On the night on Broadway, singing them buzz songs, singing them straight to the heart, song, letting it all.
Testing on animals, that's it. There you go.